One of the most well-known supernatural creatures of the entire world are the once-mortal blood-sucking fiends known as vampires. Many people believe that the origins of these creatures trace back to a ruling tyrant known as Vlad the Impaler. However, our episode today is going to focus on another vampire warlord whose history possibly extends beyond that of Vlad. Our character of focus was an ancient warlord of Celtic origin. This is the legend of the Irish vampire king who could not be killed, Abertach. I'm your host, Kevin Torres, and I'd like to welcome you to the Creatures of the Crucible. Essentially, we're going to try to make sense of how the melting pot of history has changed cultural lore throughout time, blending the stories of religions, mythologies, fairy tales, and even local beliefs and traditions. In this episode, we are going to learn of the origins of the literally bloodthirsty warlord who was the first recorded vampire of lore and the story of his demise. The earliest trace of Abertach actually comes from Bob Curran, a modern folklorist who teaches and lectures Celtic history and folklore at the University of Ulster, Coleraine. In a nutshell, he explains a location in North Derry between two towns, Gava and Dungiven, known as the Glen of the Eagle. Here lies a small town known as Slautaverty, and in its remote field is the sepulchre of Abertach. During the 5th and 6th centuries, this land consisted of many small villages and kingdoms, typically ruled by what would be considered a king, who was really no more than a chieftain or warlord. According to local beliefs, one of these chieftains was Abertach, and he was considered to be an evil wizard who was also either a dwarf or someone who had become twisted and deformed in some way. Regardless, he was so harsh and violent that even the people of his land wanted him gone, but no one was brave enough to challenge him. So, the people enlist the aid of another chieftain, known as Cathain, to rid them of the evil wizard. After slaying the wizard, Chieftain Cathain had him buried in an isolated grave. The very next day, Abertach was seen walking amongst the living, demanding his subjects to fill a bowl with their blood to sustain himself. The people returned to Cathain and again asked him to slay their undead king, to which Cathain agreed. The evil king was slain three times before Cathain had to enlist the help and knowledge of another to keep Abertach banished and buried. In this folktale, there are some variants in who Cathain enlisted for help. Some say it was a local druid or wise man. Others claim it to have been an early Christian saint. As we learned in previous episodes, Christianity was becoming widespread in this area at the time, and it's said that Christian monks were some of the first people to transcribe these early stories kept alive through word of mouth. So, it would make sense that religion has been involved in this story since its origin. There is an area outside of the glen within the Gortnamayog forest known as the Saints Track that was home to hermitages and homes of holy men that was specifically located near a holy well. Near this holy well was said to be the dwelling of Saint Owen, or John, who is credited with founding a place of Christian worship within the area. His name can even be found in multiple nearby locations as well, marking the impact he had on these developing early Irish civilizations. The druid, in one variant, seems to be unnamed. However, it is widely believed that Saint Owen was the holy man who informed Cathain of the evil he was facing. He told Cathain that Abertach had gained the ability from his dark magic to become a Niam Merb, which means the undead, and through this same evil, he was also now a Dierg Dulai, meaning a drinker of blood. This evil cannot be slain, and is essentially immortal. The only way to defeat him is to restrain him permanently. His instructions from the saint were to stab the wizard with a sword made of yew wood, then to bury him suspended in an upside-down position. Then he must sprinkle ash twigs and thorns onto the gravesite, followed by covering it with a large and heavy stone directly on top of the evil undead. Should this stone ever be lifted, Our Talk would be free to ravage the earth once again. Original novels that include the story of Our Talk are scarce. The earliest I was able to find is in a book written in 1875 by Joyce Patrick. Joyce has a small section in the book that tells of a grave in the same location modern folklorist Bob Curran speaks of. Though she does not go into depth with her story, she does describe how the version of the story she heard recounts the hero of the people who killed Our Talk not to be Cathain, but Finn McCool, a famous hero of Irish mythology. The stories and poems in the Irish mythologies and literature involving Finn McCool are known as the Fenian Cycle. Stories of Finn McCool span from the 7th century all the way to the 14th century. Personally, I would speculate that since these stories take place in the correct timeline as we have learned, it is possible the story originally took place in the series of the Fenian Cycle and was later altered by a monk so it would involve the spreading religion as playing a role in quelling the evil that was Our Talk. These are the main stories that the legend of Our Talk originated from, and the information portraying Our Talk and his demise are almost the same no matter where you look. Because there is so little documentation of this legend, I would venture to say that the story of Our Talk has stayed almost completely unchanged since its origins. In fact, the only variables I can find in this tale are how Our Talk first dies and his demand for human blood. Some stories say that Our Talk fell out of a window attempting to catch his wife having an affair and plummeted to his death, only to rise the next day. The second detail is that he was not known to have demanded human blood from his subjects until more recently, possibly to make him more relatable to the modern version of vampires. It is not often that a story with such an ancient origin remains relatively unchanged, yet somehow, the legend of Our Talk is still alive today. Perhaps part of this reason is because the supposed grave of this evil warlord of dark magic can still be seen beneath a hawthorn tree that has grown from the thorns said to be spread by the hero who slayed Our Talk. What's also interesting is that this hawthorn tree has grown atop a number of large rocks and boulders, just as the story depicts. Bob Curran not only provides a vivid account of the legend of Our Talk, but also has tales of the land where Our Talk is still said to be lying dormant. He shared that in 1997, the land was to be cleared and repurposed. However, on 3 separate occasions, the worker's brand new chainsaw stopped working for no reason as they approached the hawthorn tree to cut it down. Even more than that, another crew attempted to remove some of the large rocks using heavy machinery and large chains. While removing one of the stones, the large iron chain snapped, whipped back, and severed the hand of one of the crewmen, soaking the ground where Our Talk is buried with his blood. Since then, attempts to destroy the gravesite have been forlorn, and the site can still be visited to this day. Be warned though, the locals of the area stay away from this particular part of land, as they know something dark and sinister still has influence over the area. It's said that it would be unwise to visit the grave during the day, and even more so during the night. This has got to be one of my personal favorite monsters so far. The story of Our Talk is very straightforward, and the small variables in the way the story is told have no impact on the actual being himself. No one would argue that Our Talk, whether a dwarf or chieftain, was an evil magic warlord who rose from the dead multiple times to terrorize his subjects. It is a fact that in all versions of the story, he had to be buried upside down and covered with rocks and hawthorn in order to force his evil magic that caused him to revive to go dormant. The thought of visiting this grave brings me the chills, especially knowing that it is an actual place where unexplainable dark events in modern times, such as the worker losing his hand, can still take place. Because this story has so many steady details, I will not venture to change any of its origins in my homemade folktale. And without further ado, I'd like to share with you my own story of the evil that was Our Talk.
strength, and fearlessness. That's what you would think our clan's adage would be when you met our king. I wish I could say that were our lives. Unfortunately, even when we weren't at war, our people did not live in peace. The Eternal Mission, as he called it, King Avartok, that is. As much as we tried to exceed his expectations, the bar was only raised higher just as we reached it. He was not always like this, though he was always a brute who treated his men no better than servants. He was never murderous. But then, something changed in him. I can even recall the exact day, hour even, that something within him was altered. About 3 months ago, a strange man made a visit to our clan. Our guards assured he was free of any contraband and granted him access for the night after he paid his dues. After he treated himself to a bowl of soup and a heavy glass of wine, he approached our king's tent. None of us in the clan had ever met this mysterious stranger before. Yet, when our king saw him approach, he welcomed him as if they were long-lost best friends. That's when we saw something falter in his demeanor. Moments after entering his tent, we heard him shout, "I don't care who, but somebody better bring me enough wine for me and our guest or suffer the consequences." That night changed the future of our clan forever, and the stranger who cursed our leader with a wicked hex during the night was never seen or heard from again. While this figure left early in the morning while most still slept, the watchman still had to grant him access to the gates, and they say he could not have left in more of a hurry. Our king woke up with a rather nasty hangover and thought it would be best complemented with malice and punishment. I remember one man had his behavior corrected for not checking on the king sooner, as he had not left his tent at the normal hour. Another man received a rather harsh punishment for overserving him and our unwelcomed guest. From there, our king's demands only grew, and so did his anxiety. He had become the victim of some type of curse or illness that caused him to shrink and his body to twist the stronger he became. Eventually, all of our people towered over him, and he was no taller than an adolescent, yet more formidable than any of our men. He had a thirst for, well, everything, especially power, and power he had gained. He could force a man to do his bidding just by looking him in the eye. Wherever he walked, the wind would go around him instead of flowing across him, as if it was scared to encounter him. A butterfly could stand comfortably on his shoulder, even in the harshest winds, if not for the fear of bursting into a colorful flame. Not only did our king change, he had become evil. None of our men dared to look him in the eye, and no one dared to challenge him. He had stopped eating soup and started eating the red meat, raw. One of the guards for the larder even told me that he had seen him drinking the blood of one of the freshly slaughtered sheep before it was harvested. I don't know what happened to our king in his tent during his meeting with that man, but I do know that he was not our king anymore. We didn't even think he was human. He hadn't drank water, wine, or mead in weeks. His sleep patterns were more disturbed, and he often woke up and wandered the village at night. He had become something else entirely. He had been trading off so many of our goods that we could barely survive. Though no one had died of starvation, I feared it would be our reality in the coming days. We had decided it was time to elect a new leader through trials of combat. However, he had driven our bodies to a point so weak that we could never defend ourselves against him. Our only hope was to have him defeated in a proper battle between clans. We had devised a plan where we would all give a portion of our rations for 5 days to help supply a single one of us on a journey out of our territory. It would be 3 days on horseback to make it to the lands that belonged to the Yokahin clan, so the traveler would be without food or water for up to 2 days if the Yokahin clan denied our request. Before our king had this unfortunate darkness fall upon him, we were friendly with the neighboring Yokahin clan. We traded regularly and often had a truce on borders between our lands. If it was asked, we likely would have joined them in battle, though, as fortune would have it, never occurred. Our offer was simple. Defeat our leader for us, our king who has become a tyrant, in exchange for a portion of our land. So many of our people had disappeared since our king had become cursed that we knew we could never make use of all there was to be foraged in the coming season. Our only chance at a decent life was to have the Mad King removed. To our great fortune, the Okahane clan agreed, under one condition. The chieftain pitied our weakened army of malnourished men and agreed to fight only our king in a one-versus-one battle. Then, sent a challenge to our king by his own messenger. The chieftain of the Okahanes was so confident in his capabilities that he had no fear of the battle with King Avartok. He himself was not much larger in stature than an ordinary man, but you understood the strength he possessed when you saw the size of the weapon carried on his back. He made this a one-on-one challenge to grant mercy to our men from battle, as we did not stand a chance against their warriors in our current state. King Avartok happily agreed to this challenge. Blinded by this curse and the power he had gained, all he saw was another opportunity to grow his personal empire. The Okahane clan were known for their physical prowess in battle. The strength with which they swung their weapons was matched only by their speed. However, our king's malign strength that had been created by that evil visitor in the night was not to be underestimated. None of us had seen what he was capable of now, but judging by the twisting changes his body had gone through in recent months, he was capable of a lot. Oddly, a storm quickly approached on the day of the Battle of Kings. The clouds were so dark and thick that one would not be able to identify the position of the sun. It was dark, cold, and windy. After the clouds enveloped the sky, King Avartok approached the arena. Almost all of us in the clan were there. I don't believe a single soul was there to see our king die. I think we were there to say goodbye to the dark past we all knew. He was not going to be missed, and the history he left with our clan would be infamous for generations to come. It was as if we were saying goodbye to an era of our lives and welcoming a new one. The oath was made by each king's own tongue. The losing clan would surrender what was promised, a portion of their best land, and a new king shall be decided in the following days. The men took their place in the arena, drew their weapons, and with the sound of a massive drum, the battle began. The mightiest of the Okahane clan was their chieftain, Kathane, who was wielding a broadsword while our king held a massive serpent axe, each with a shield in their offhand. King Avartok took the first swing, and though Kathane blocked it with his shield, he was knocked back for underestimating the overwhelming strength of the child-sized king. He was immediately charging back against our king and bashed him with his shield and followed through with a mighty swing of his weapon. King Avartok blocked it with the haft of his axe and returned the blow with a mighty punch with his shield. Then King Avartok let out a shrieking roar that pierced the ears of everyone watching. All any of us could hear was a loud ring in our ears. Though we were struggling to keep our eyes on the fight, it was clear that Chieftain Kathane's focus was unfazed by the sound, and he continued to battle. I can't imagine having my ears pierced from that noise while continuing battle as the chieftain did. And it was at this moment he knew he was facing no ordinary foe. Avartok was hungry for the strength he would gain from defeating this foe, and the mighty chieftain Kathane was desperate to deliver our clan from evil. Neither of them were getting tired, and so, both were still terrifying enemies. It was clear that Kathane would not be overpowering King Avartok, so he relied on his speed. He stepped in, thrusting at the king, who blocked his sword and swung back with his axe, aiming for Kathane's legs. Unexpectedly, Kathane blocked the swing of the axe with his foot, meeting King Avartok's grip with his heel, and then pressed the king's shield away with his own and stabbed King Avartok in the heart. Our king let out a gurgling wail before collapsing on the ground. We immediately carried our king away and thanked Kathane and the Okahane clan for their aid. King Avartok was buried with honor. We had his funeral the same day as his death, and for the first time in ages, we feasted. Our new king had yet to be determined, but we had a good idea who it would be. Our plan was to have a tournament the following week so our warriors could regain some strength, and we could name our strongest warrior as the new king. But to our dismay, we had a horrifying surprise. After eating until our bellies were bursting, we awoke from our deep sleep to see King Avertacht standing in the doorway. He now had the appearance of his old self from before the evil stranger visited him, except now he was withering, almost as if he was a decaying corpse wandering the village. He was demanding blood. He commanded that three people must volunteer and give him an offering, or else he would decide his victims himself. Though he was not killing us, yet, these conditions were far worse than when he was, well, alive, and we would all wither with him soon enough. We sent the messenger back out to meet the Okahain clan on their journey back home. It had been less than a day since they departed, and they could not be too far. They couldn't believe the news that our king had risen from the dead, and they returned to us immediately. Cathain approached the king a second time upon his arrival, and at this point he would not be treated as a warrior any longer, but a source of evil instead. This time was a much easier match. Cathain plunged his sword into Avertacht not one, not two, but three times to ensure his death this time. On this night, the Okahain clan joined us for his burial, and we provided them with hospitality throughout the night. We traded war stories with the Okahains, and our clan's bond grew stronger from this unfortunate circumstance. In the morning, our circumstances hadn't changed. The king was wandering the village yet again, demanding more blood. Only this time, he required six subjects worth of blood instead of three. Cathain again plunged his sword through him multiple times, and though he was buried a third time, it was well understood by all that dark and evil magic was cursing the king, and he would continue to rise. The Okahains held a meeting for what felt like an eternity. At the end, I saw Chieftain Cathain ride out on his own towards the Gortnamayog Forest. The second-in-command explained that he was journeying to a place known as the Saint's Track to request the aid of a druid, a man of magical knowledge whom they encountered numerous times in the area. Our guards joined theirs for the night, encircling the grave of Avertacht, waiting for him to rise. Just as predicted, moments before sunrise, the earth beneath our feet started to shake violently. We all retreated as we feared the earth was going to swallow us. He grabbed one of the men by their ankles and pulled him down into the ground. When he rose from the shivering soil, he was drinking the blood directly from the poor man's neck. We immediately charged him and all of our blows landed. Yet again, for the third time, we had struck down and reburied our misbegotten king. Only this time, we had to lay one of our own warriors to rest as well, who was mortally wounded from the bite of the evil king. Cathain arrived midday, and with good news. He was given the knowledge of how to overcome this evil. He had a log of wood from a yew tree with him. A craftsman from their clan had been instructed to whittle it into a fine sword with a well-pointed end. Cathain declared that he would engage our king in combat one final time, and this time, he would be laid to rest. The druid shared with him the magical power Hawthorne has against evil, as well as another way to combat the dark magic that returned him to life. For the fourth and final time, our king emerged from the ground. Our lesson learned, we all watched from a distance. Cathain approached him and easily knocked him to the ground. He plunged his wooden sword directly into Avertacht's heart, and his flesh began to sizzle around the sword. We buried our king far away from our village, alone, and away from warriors of our clan. We had been instructed that his curse to rise would always bring him upwards after death, so we must bury him upside down, so that his up is our down. Even as we lowered him head first into his grave, we could still hear the blood sizzling against the sword in his heart, a sign that the dark magic was still coursing through his veins. We placed many large boulders on top of his grave, each one requiring three or more men to move. Upon placing the stones, we spread thorns from a hawthorn tree amongst the grave, as the druid instructed. With three barriers presented against the magic, we were warned that the king would never die, and if any of these wards are broken, the evil King Avartakht, Drinker of Blood, could one day rise again. A perimeter was built around his grave, as well as warnings of the evil that lurks near his burial site. We hope that no one ever disturbs his rest, lest Avartakht curse his saviors with his immortal presence. That concludes this episode of Creatures of the Crucible. I hope you enjoyed the historical information of Avartakht and the folktale that I created to share with you. Don't forget that Avartakht's grave is a real place. You can actually go visit it today, while it would be advised not to, for the land is cursed. I hope you all enjoyed the story. Don't forget to follow the podcast if you haven't already, and please consider donating to my Patreon to help fund the creation of this show. The information in this episode was researched, written, produced, and hosted by me, Kevin Torres. All of my sources, as well as my social media, are listed in the episode's details. Thanks for joining me in this episode of Creatures of the Crucible. I hope to see you next time where we discuss the seemingly sinister Christmas spirit, Krampus.